Connecting the dots of strange anomalies, making it safe to tell your stories of high strangeness, and looking for the truth from Brazil to your own backyard. Hi, everybody. I'm Connie Willis, not afraid to go there. And this is Coast to Coast AM. We are broadcasting live tonight from the 840 WHAS studios of iHeartMedia in Louisville, Kentucky, home of the Kentucky Derby, Bourbon, and the undefeated Kentucky Wildcats. Woo! Yay! Also, 7 degrees here, by the way. Happy Valentine's evening. One of the best dates you can have on a night like tonight is with someone willing to turn the lights down low and share with you and your love of Coast to Coast AM. Tonight, we will be talking with Christopher Garitano, filmmaker of award-winning Montauk Chronicles, the story of time travel, ETs, mind control, abduction, murder, all sorts of stuff based on three men who claim secret experiments were conducted deep beneath the surface of Camp Hero Air Force Base. And one of those men is Preston Nichols, who's going to be talking to us later tonight. So grab your favorite beverage and blanket and get comfortable. We have an incredible story for you tonight, and we'll be back with Christopher Garitano next on Coast to Coast AM. Happy Valentine's, everybody. I'm Connie Willis on Coast to Coast AM, and tonight we're going to be talking with Christopher Garitano, a New Yorker who majored in film, graduated at the School of Visual Arts in Manhattan, owner-president of White Phosphorus Pictures, that's in USA and Hong Kong, and first documentary that he did, he's a filmmaker, was Horror Business. It's an experimental study regarding the struggles of independent horror movie making. We can understand that one. He also wrote and created graphic novel, South Texas. That's based on the true story behind the making of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It was actually serialized in Fangoria magazine. And then it took 10 years to make the film we're going to be talking about tonight, Montauk Chronicles. He just released it, and it's already award-winning. I'm very happy to bring on, and by the way, what the music you're hearing right now is Beginning the Adventure, which is the theme song to Montauk Chronicle. I love it. Christopher Garitano. Christopher, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Connie.
It's great to hear from you. I spoke with you years ago, and you were making this film, and I could not wait to see it and bring it to light as well, I guess, because I was working with someone that was bringing in documentaries at the time, and I couldn't wait for you to get it done. And finally, you got it done. I know it took you a long time, but watching it, you connected the dots for me on a lot of things going on that I didn't even realize was the Montauk Chronicles. I loved your techniques. I felt the fear, the mystery, the horror, the suspense, everything that you did want to get across. I really enjoyed it. Your narrator was fantastic. You are smooth yourself. And I just wanted to throw that in before you tell everyone what exactly was the alleged Montauk Project and Montauk Chronicles.
Well, first, thank you very much. And in that 2 years, there was two films made. The one you saw was the very second. And the essentially, the Montauk Chronicles, or the Montauk Project, or the Camp Hero experiments, were allegedly several men were involved in a covert experiment that took place roughly between 1971 and 1983, where it was shut down. And during this time, it is said that after the Air Force moved out, a covert faction of the government, Black Operation, moved in the facility that was deep underneath the ground that on the books is not supposed to be there, and conducted everything you could think of in regard to mind control, reverse alien technology, time travel experiments, and the several men that have claim this has happened, three of which are in my picture, have been telling this story for 30 years. And one, Alfred Bielek, died with the story, took it to his grave. So that was the initial fascination. You know, the story was out there, books written by Preston Nichols, books written by Stuart Swerdlow. Alfred Bielek was on several programs throughout the years. And, you know, just like you and all the listeners of the show right now, I had an interest in the paranormal. Little did I know when I began the picture that it was going to be almost a decade of my life, probably the most intense journey and most intense experience of my life, and that the lines between reality and fantasy would completely blur the whole time. Because it isn't just, you know, I mean, when I was a child, I was into the basic paranormal mysteries, everything from cryptozoological animals to hauntings, but, and, you know, to UFO sightings. But in this case, this is like a mecca of every possible paranormal happening.
Absolutely.
And a philosophy that comes with it. So this was my pull into this situation that would not let me go for nearly a decade, and I'm still here. I'm talking to you about it. So,
well, I was going to say the same thing. You, aliens, time travel, mind control, abuse, murder, creation from the mind, where they could sit in that chair and create, manifest something, and a 30-foot tall Bigfoot arises. So, yes, everything was involved there. So, for those people that don't know about it, first of all, how do you start an investigation like that? How do you begin a documentary with all those things involved and pull it together? Because you did it, but I don't know how you, I guess that's why it took 10 years.
Well, the idea was to take it seriously from the beginning, which I did. And I had no interest in backtracking to any of the books that were already out there because they seemed to be very kind of biased in their delivery. So I wanted to start from scratch, which is exactly what we did, and visited the men that were telling these tales that say they were survivors or participants of this experiment, and listened to their story from scratch as if I've never heard it. And that was the idea.
And how did that go? Did you believe before you went in and talked to them?
No, you know, well, of course, I'm well aware that, you know, we're in the Milky Way galaxy and amongst billions of other solar systems, and then, you know, outside of that, billions of other galaxies, so probability tells us that there must be intelligent life out there, and, you know, according to credible witnesses over the years, it's safe to assume, regardless of what the governments of the world want us to know or give us permission to know, it's safe to assume that we've been visited by intelligent life at some point or many points. But these men, the men in my picture, claim that everything we know, including possible past, you know, UFO reports, all of that is a lie. And that there's a hidden world history, and that we were designed and engineered by aliens. And, of course, this information is out there all the time. But this is a very specific philosophy, and it all goes back to Montauk. So I was a bit stunned in the beginning with the information, because it was a bit of a tall order all at once. You know, I believe in intelligent extraterrestrial life, and I believe that in other dimensions, and we go somewhere after we die. You know, we have reason to believe this. It's just too much information over millennia to not support this, okay? But you still have to use discretion, and which is what I did in the beginning. And so when I first got to Alfred Bielek's place, to Preston Nichols, I used caution, and rightfully so, because if you want an unbiased opinion, and if you want something for an audience to form their own decision at the end, you cannot tell them what to think. You need to display it for them and allow them to ingest it. So that was my intention from the beginning, and that's how I started.
Well, I know that I know it affects you emotionally, the fact that it's about one of the areas of it, because it's a whole lot of different things, as you said, but one of the big major things about it is they abducted young boys and they beat them to, of course, murdered some of them, but beat them to the point of breaking them down in order to use mind control.
Sure. And in the very beginning, I, you know, because of other things that I had researched that were similar, and also what I learned along the way, and I always thought it was a possibility, regardless of what's probable and regardless of what we know about extraterrestrials and reverse alien technology, in this particular situation, I felt it was very probable that the rest of those things were created as a distraction, as disinformation, to murder, to mass murder. Because Expendable, the story goes that Expendable boys, runaways, orphans, were used to sometimes create Manchurian Candidate assassins, and sometimes just to use experimental mind control techniques in numbers upon these boys, which many of them died. So I always considered the possibility that the rest of the stuff, including the giant Bigfoot that was created, was just disinformation to distract people from mass murder, an illegal mass murder, because in 1995, of course, Bill Clinton semi-admitted to Tuskegee medical experiments, as well as some MKUltra references, and there was a congressional hearing. So I did all that research, and some of that is referred to in the picture. You know, it's always possible that some of these things are used, the science fiction is used as a mask to distract people from the real truth.
So a base story to this is the abductions, correct? And can you just give people the basic story of Montauk?
Sure. Well, once again, in 1971, I have three men that claim that there was a program that began in 1971 deep beneath the Camp Hero Air Force Base in Montauk, New York. Now, the base had been there for years, but the Air Force moved out, and once the SAGE radar tower became defunct because of satellite technology kind of rendering it useless, there was still a facility there. So the three men in my picture claim that the facility was used by a private organization, and also Preston Nichols claims that it was derived from Nazi experiments, that we do have evidence that we brought over Nazi scientists after the war, after the Nuremberg trials, and that they were used eventually at a place called Brookhaven Labs. Well, once Congress said we can no longer work with these bastards, Preston Nichols suggested that they were brought to Montauk, so their mind control technology, all of the science that was derived from the things that they were using in Nazi Germany was transferred over to Montauk. I mean, there's so many stories surrounding this thing. But the core story is, which matches up to some past programs and mind control programs, that, and this is the number that's given in the picture by the subjects, is that into the hundreds of thousands, possibly, over a 13-year period, there were runaway boys and orphans, you know, expendable, non-desirable children used, you know, where they thought maybe the kids wouldn't be missed, were used in this program during that period of time, and programs all over the world and all over the country. So a variety of things occurred, and some of which were Preston Nichols, who you'll probably hear this whole thing later, is that to fracture the mind, to make the mind susceptible to the mind control that's going to be implanted, to fracture the mind of the child, they needed to put them through a series of traumatic events, which included heavy amounts of drugs given to them, and physical beatings, and torture, and sleep deprivation, all to implant the mind control. Then they would send in a false rescue situation, and then they would begin to train the child through psychic remote viewing programs, to implant suggestion, to use them as assassins later. And so there's a lot of suggestion that people like, you know, in relation to Sirhan and certain assassins and assassins of people like John Lennon and Chapman, you know, all of those people were mind-controlled. They were implanted with suggestion. And this is the origins of that, so they say.
When you walked around the base on your own, how did you get in there, and what was your vibe? What did you get from that yourself? How did that feel?
Well, it's legal to walk around Camp Hero. You can go there today, but there's a certain point where you cannot go. And being that I took liberty to jump the fence, and we were joined by a very thorough researcher, Paul Fagan, who knew the place. He'd studied Montauk and Camp Hero for 10 years. And so he knew his way around, and he took us around the base and led us through every piece. And he's a very practical researcher. I mean, it's less about the paranormal with him, about getting down the geography and trying to determine if there are tunnels underneath the things that were claimed, is there a way to get down? And so we discovered entrances, which I cannot confirm exactly what they are, but they certainly go down, that were cemented shut, many of them, in the woods surrounding Montauk, all over the grounds, all over the many acres that are Camp Hero.
Well, I know that you talked to the three guys that we were talking about, Al, Bielik, Preston, who we're going to be talking to later, and also Stuart.
Stuart Swerdlow, Preston Nichols, and Alfred Bielik.
But then also another guy showed up, and you added him to your film. You speak about it in the film that I guess you were pretty much done, and then this guy calls you up. Was it James Bruce? Was that his name?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fake name that he gave, to protect his identity. He's in the U.S. military. He has a family. He has a job. So he's trying to protect his identity. But he claims that after 1983, where I guess the initial project was crashed, this thing continued. The Montauk Project continued in one form or another. And so this guy contacted me through social networking shortly after I was done. I mean, the word was out about my film. There was reports on Huffington Post, so people knew. And again, this is the second picture that I made, so the word was out. And he contacted me very late in the game, and I was contacted by several people who, their stories were interesting, but not interesting enough to put my movie on hold once again. So, but he was different, and there was something about him where it just seemed like he was recollecting something that was much larger than him, if you understand what I'm saying. I hope I'm making myself clear. I'm not saying that he couldn't have thought of this, but from his voice inflection and his cadence, it just seemed like a guy who had gone through something and he was doing his best to articulate the situation. Didn't seem like he was making it up. So that was my initial attraction to this man. And then we continued and we met, and I was convinced at the very least that he believed what he was saying. And what he said was that this program was so widespread that they were visiting kindergartens and schools and high schools looking for recruits. And so it began when he was in kindergarten, where, if anybody recalls when they were younger, they had like the gifted class. Really interesting, right? So they would take kids out of the class and say, hey, these are the gifted kids. And they removed them, brought them into another class. And he claims that he was part of one of that. It began there, where they were brought in puzzles. They wanted to see who would complete the puzzle quick enough, and then they would choose these kids and start separating them. And then it eventually evolved into a field trip where they separated the children once again, and they let off several boys, he was one of them, into a program where Alfred Bielik apparently was, and brought him down to Montauk over many years, and then eventually used him as an assassin. And so I needed to hear what he had to say, and I went out to Camp Hero with him and asked him to show me some of the areas where he was taken to.
And this was a surprise, because you did that right on camera.
Yes,
as he did it.
That is one part of Camp Hero I had never seen before. And so in the film, you'll see he took me out to, we drove out to the base. We talked for a while, and I asked him to take me to the point where he said there was a room with a hatch that he was led down into. So he led me into a part of the base where, again, I had never seen before. And we ended up at this structure, really into heavy brush and thorns. It wasn't apparent. And there was a hatch. It was a whole structure. It was a small bunker built into the side of the hill. Now, Paul claims that is a water pump house, or a now defunct water pump area. But the large iron door that's in the front is completely welded shut, as is the hatch on top. And there was a point made by one of the, Eric Swanson, another gentleman in my picture, that they would never list it as the boy experiment house, So we'll never get the straight story. We have to explore these things ourselves, in other words.
However, it's so fun to watch your documentary as you let it unfold before our eyes as it did yours. So hang in there with me, Christopher. We're going to be right back. Christopher Garantano with his film Montauk Chronicles here on Coast to Coast AM. It's Coast to Coast AM, as he said. Connie Willis here. Happy Valentine's to you. That's great music, isn't it? I'm singing along here, jamming out with you. Please keep in mind that whenever you want to know what's going on with Coast to Coast and what Nori's talking about, just go to coasttocoastam.com and you can see all the upcoming shows. And if you've missed one that you were like, oh, I can't believe I missed that, become a Coast Insider. And you can, it doesn't matter if you sleep through one of the shows, you can always go back and listen as a Coast Insider. And be sure to check out tonight's show if you want to know about how you can see the film yourself that we're talking about, Montauk Chronicles. Go to coasttocoastam.com, and you're going to see with tonight's show, you'll have the link there, and you can learn a little bit more about Christopher Garantano as well. I think you're going to like the film. So we're going to be talking more about it here in just a few minutes as we continue talking with Christopher Garantano right here on Coast to Coast AM. We're back on Coast to Coast AM, Connie Willis, talking with Christopher Garantano with his film, Montauk Chronicles. Christopher, welcome back.
Thank you, Connie.
I know this is kind of a neat thing for you, huh, to get on the classic Coast to Coast here, doing your film. As a child, you were listening to the show. And,
yeah, when I was in college listening to it, I mean, you know, and again, that's why I was interested in making this movie at first, because it's just an interest I had since I was a kid, probably like most of you listening. And, you know, it starts off with this fascination. You know, you want to be thrilled, and you're interested in the science of things, and you're interested in the mystery. But the difference between most of the world's mysteries and the Montauk Project is huge.
It is full of everything, and I want to ask you about that. All the technologies, and you showed them in your film, but you have the chair and you talk about that, because not only I want to ask you about the technologies, but what do you think about them? Do you believe them to be real after doing your research?
Well, I mean, the chair is, I mean, we've seen it in so many. The technology itself, it's not tangible to us. We don't have anything to go on. And that's the thing that needs to be understood here, is that there was no archived information whatsoever. There are mm-hmm. no photographs. There is no evidence of this at all. And so all we have are the testimonies of three men. Or four men, you know, or a few men now that they're James Bruce and Duncan Cameron and all these people that are out there. And there'll be more. But that's all we have right now. There is a base, but that's on the record of history as an Air Force base. We have no record of the actual Montauk Project as it's been explained many times over the past 20-something years.
Yeah, the thing that interests me the most is that these guys have been telling the same stories for decades. They haven't gone off of them. They've stuck pretty much to the same stories. Maybe they've learned a little bit more and told that along the way. But I love the fact that they, when you watch them on different interviews as well, when they're all together or separately, they still got the same stories. It doesn't seem as though they've gotten together to create this. Usually that kind of falls apart.
They do. And here's the thing, and this is what I ask you to do in the picture, as you remember, is that I ask you, since we don't have any evidence, and it's very important that when someone is telling a story like this, you pay attention, even if you're not an expert in linguistics or facial expression or countenance, still pay attention to those things, because we do
Agreed.
Have this inherent lie detector. And, okay, for instance, you know, when Preston Nichols is talking about the boy program and the picture, there's something in his expression that seems real to me, very real. He's talking about the boys that were beaten. And the way he lowers his eyes, and it's not acting. It seems like he's really thinking about something that disturbed him. And mm-hmm. so that's what we had to go on. And that's kind of why I leave it up to the audience to investigate with me. I mean, I give you as much information as I can in a two-hour period.
You do. It's loaded. And, you know, that's one of the things, too, that I agree with on you, where people, when they say there's no evidence whatsoever, there's no paperwork, but my thought is, I don't know, maybe it's off, but if you're wanting to hide a project, if you're wanting people to not know about it, wouldn't you get rid of any evidence whatsoever, including the paperwork? That's kind of the easiest thing of all to get rid of.
Of course, and we found out about MKUltra by mistake. So, you know, in terms of proof. So the thing is with Montauk, Paul, who's continuing to research with me, or for me, actually, because he's constantly doing research, discovered, because there's an ominous building in the town of Montauk, which is 5 miles away from the actual base. And it's a very tall building. I think now it's condos, but in the past, we discovered that it really was occupied by the FBI. Now, why on earth would the FBI be out in the middle of nowhere, Montauk, New York? Why?
Well, that's interesting.
You know, there's a lot of weird history to Montauk. It goes way back to the Revolutionary War and beyond, so...
Well, there's also, what, a hotel next to it, and it's called Memory Hotel?
Yeah,
That's kind of in plain sight.
Right. Now, it's weird because there's that surface-level element of the Montauk Tales that seems like, to me, when I first heard of the story and checked out one of the early books, I was like, this is ridiculous. But I was interested in, because I was aware that the men who were telling the story were telling it for years, and I think it was more fascinating to me to meet them in person as opposed to trying to adapt some book that I just feel it left a lot of things out, and it was very important to hear it. Now, yeah, okay, you can tell me until the end of time that you were part of a time travel experiment, but until you show me something, some kind of evidence, I mean, we have some evidence of the USS Eldridge, you know, actually a lot, and that, like, survivors and people that were there. But in the case of the Montauk Project, right now we have 3 major people who say they participated in these things. And that's great and all, but I want to know more. I want to see more. And so you can tell me about time travel forever, but until I'm shown something. So I needed to go investigate this thing for myself. It was so important. And
well,
I discovered much along the way.
Yeah, you did. And that's where you connected some dots with me, because along the way in all my research of all sorts of paranormal as well, I have gotten to the point of meeting people that they call themselves super soldiers. And that to me was kind of what super soldiers. And they were all kids pretty much, or, you know, in their 20s. And some of them that still look like kids that were older, but they all had a certain look to them, a certain feel to them. And they all had similar backgrounds, and they all, by the way, have incredible abilities. And they talk about being a super soldier, where they're abducted, taken, and they go to other planets, other areas. They fight dragons. They fight armies, and they're brought back. And it may have felt like 15 hours for them, where it might have been 30 minutes our time. However, the time travel and the time loop and the fact that they bring you back and they can do all those different things that I've heard about with the Montauk Chronicles, it all seems to make sense. And these kids, you know, I call them kids because they seem like kids, but they're older. But they have bruises on them. They're exhausted. They're worn out. And they're telling stories that connected with what you were talking about with Montauk and what Preston talks about. And that's where it pulls some things together for me. And these super soldier people, they are, there's many. So are you even thinking about a second film? Because, boy, that's who you can talk to, those guys for sure.
Very much so. I feel that, I've always felt that I needed to solidly lay the groundwork with the first volume, and I wanted to follow it up with something called Ghosts of Montauk, which I'm referring to the residuals of the whole thing. The fact that there's some mania surrounding it, but there's also things to look at, very important things to take note. And the further I dug into this story, you know, you sit at home and you go to the movies and you think all these things we see in science fiction are only there. But unfortunately, the further you dig, and this was most surprising for me and very shocking to my system, Whereas, you know, I would have loved to have believed in every possible fantasy, you know, it could be real, but I didn't before. And now, after, you know, unpeeling this onion little by little, you know, you start to find things that add some plausibility to the most outrageous things, where before I would have never believed to be true, you know, outside of in fiction. You know, this was all science fiction to me, and now it seems science fiction is all possible. And you wouldn't know this unless you do your research, and most people do not.
Yes, this is true. This is true.
Just did some research. Most people will shake their heads and say no, because they're safe. They feel safe within the existence that they've created for themselves. But we live in a very mysterious and dark world, and if you do some research, you'll start to discover this is very true.
You are absolutely right about that. And when you talked about outrageous things that you saw and experienced, tell me what some of those are. And I got to ask you again before you do that, and I'm sure this might be one of those outrageous things that you discovered. About the chair, we kind of skipped over that. The chair, describe the chair to people, and did you get to see where that possibly was?
No. It's impossible, because apparently, you know, you can't get down into the base. We went into the tower, and Preston Nichols claims there was some activity there, but this was allegedly all...
It was all underground.
What was going on underground, which is at this point unaccessible. We cannot get there. We tried, and everything is locked. Everything is shut down and cemented shut. And also, I truly believe in my heart of hearts that they're not going to let us go. If there's something there, and even if it's dormant, there is some kind of security in place that would keep us from going down there. If we were to discover bones or bodies, you know, of boys in record number that were murdered, do you honestly believe they would let us find this?
I don't.
They would stop us.
Can't be that easy, right?
Yeah. So I think what we need to keep doing is we need to keep talking about it, and we need to, I think, limit ourselves to what's possible. And if we attach giant Sasquatch to every time we look for an account of a runaway boy being taken for one of these programs, we're going to mess it up. So I think my focus, and that's why the main focus of this picture, even though I went through the whole thing, was on the boy program, because I feel, because of the research I've done, that is very believable. There are things, and if you go look up something that occurred in Florida called the Dozier School, where they found hundreds of bodies of orphan boys, murdered boys, tortured boys, and this allegedly happened around the same time as some of these other programs. Now, Alfred Bielek claimed that these things were happening all over the United States, all over. And these programs were in place. So it becomes very believable. But, you know, if we're just doing this for recreation and entertainment, then I think we're wasting our time. But if you really want to discover how deep the rabbit hole goes, so to speak, I think we should just focus on, okay, we have at least some kind of lead. We have some kind of evidence for this. And if we get into the chair, now the chair apparently, and Preston will talk much more about that because he's the man that partially invented it.
Absolutely.
But he claimed that there was a powerful psychic, which is portrayed in the picture, would sit in the chair, and the chair would react as this kind of, as they called it, a step-up transformer, where it would take a thought that is in the head of the psychic who's sitting in the chair and then manifest this thought physically into reality. So to crash the project, and Preston's going to talk about this later, the man in the chair, his name is Duncan Cameron, thought of this beast from an old science fiction movie, and this is what they claim really happened, to destroy the base, because the project was about to start implementing the mind control into the mass population. And so these three men, Stuart was very young at the time, but two of the men decided to crash the project in this method. Now, this all sounds like the worst Saturday evening science fiction film you could think of. But I think somewhere underneath this, there's some truth to, at the very least, and the most horrible and the most atrocious thing you can think of, that boys were taken and experimented on in the most brutal and vicious and insane ways you can think of.
I think there's a lot of truth to a lot of films that we've seen, that we've grown up on, and TV shows. I think there's a lot of truth to those, to maybe prepare us one day. I just believe that.
I agree. I mean, it's tough for people who haven't done their research, and obviously we're in good company. I'm sure many of you listening right now do plenty of research and understand that these things are possible.
So I got a...
Sure.
Well, here's a personal question for you. Okay.
Sure.
So you grew up around this area?
Yes.
Correct? How far away were you from
the base? Well, I spent my summers in Montauk. Now, I was a total science fiction horror kid, so if I knew there was a base with monsters and aliens up the hill, it would have been a great... Sometimes Montauk got boring as a kid. It was the beach and, you know, restaurants. So it was... It's a vacation spot in the summer. In the winter, it's desolate and quiet. And, you know, there's some locals that live there, and it's a fishing community. But there's also the history with the base. And then after the Spanish-American War, Roosevelt took the Rough Riders there. There's a huge history there. George Washington was there. There was a lot of history in Montauk. A lot of things happening in that area. It's weird.
And apparently, and underground there. So how far away was your house from the base?
Well, I lived about 2 hours west.
Oh, okay, okay. But you went there and visited?
In the summertime, yeah.
Okay, here's the question. I know you spoke of that you were, you know, into this as a child and, you know, would watch the skies and things like that. So, and I also know that the Montauk boys, a lot of them, of course, some of them don't even remember it because they would blank out their memory. Just a question, just asking. Don't know what you're going to say, but do you think at all that the reason why that you are so intrigued by this and have put so much time and effort, 10 years, into this, do you think that it's possible that you might be a Montauk boy?
I thought of it throughout that time. I did not want to feed that thought because I had enough paranoia. I mean, and let me explain. You know, I had visited Al Bielek first, okay, and Preston second. Now, to a person who had never been exposed to this stuff before, they fit the perfect, character of a hermit. And so I was comfortable with that because I expected that. And, you know, they had some really wacky ideas. And at the time, this is where, you know, I wasn't exposed to anything like this before except in movies. So these were characters. But when I arrived at Stuart Swerdlow's place, where everybody is, you know, normal, but their life philosophy wasn't to me at the time, and that was a big shock to my system, and I started to realize, wow, you know, these things are possible. After 4 days of listening to every human being in that place, very intelligent, sound-minded, you know, everybody works, everybody lives normally, but they believe in all of this. And so that started to be a real shock to my system. Now, Stuart had suggested at one point that I was there as a kid. Again, I wasn't going to allow myself to feed these ideas and let them grow. I wanted to, if some memory came out at some point, great. But as of right now, I had enough paranoia that the idea that we're living in a place where young boys are being taken away and murdered in record number is enough for me to continue.
Well, I'm glad you are going to continue, and I want you to keep us up to date to what's going to be happening next. And I certainly encourage people to watch Montauk Chronicles by, who we just spoke to for the last hour, Christopher Garantano, writer and director of it. Wonderful film. Christopher, maybe you were. We'll find out in the future here. I wish we had more time to talk with you, and I'm very happy that you are into the documentary world and the paranormal world because I feel that you are bringing us good, unbiased material, and I like your research. So thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Christopher Garantano, Montauk Chronicles. Preston B. Nichols is next to tell us his part in the Montauk Project, and we will be taking calls later as well, right here on Coast to Coast AM.